at 10 Cent Beer Night as we head to the hotline to welcome in our next guest, Jim Clark, author of the book Rally Round Cleveland, the story of the 1974 Cleveland Indians. An entire chapter in that book is dedicated to 10 Cent Beer Night. Jim was actually there, and many of you know Jim, as he has been the voice of the Akron Rubber Ducks, formerly the Akron Arrows, for many, many years. Jim, a pleasure to have you on, as always. How are you today?
Great. Thanks for having me on, guys. I'm looking forward to it here.
Well, today marks the 46th anniversary of 10 Cent Beer Night. You were there at Cleveland's Municipal Stadium. Jim, as you look back, what stands out the most to you about that night?
You know, the weather was perfect, and it was an 80-degree night. It was a Tuesday night, and what stands out the most is, after thinking back on it over and over and over, is that I'm really glad there was not 50,000 fans at the stadium. If the team was playing well at that point, they had picked things up with the big trade with the Yankees. They had come off what started Beer Night was the week before in Texas. You can find this video on YouTube on what led to Beer Night. They were in Texas closing out a series with the Rangers. And it was the Rangers' Beer Night, believe it or not. Late in the game in the eighth inning, Milt Wilcox pitching for the Indians. Lenny Randle bunts down the first baseline. Wilcox picks it up. Randle elbows Wilcox, just cold cocks him to the ground. When John Ellis tackles Randle, the bench is emptied. Buddy Bell wrestles down Billy Martin. Ferguson Jenkins wrestles on Espromonte. It all broke loose. After the game, Billy Martin, talking to the press, they'll be mad at me in Cleveland, as the Rangers are going to the best location in the nation in about 4 or 5 days. But he goes, I'm not looking forward to it. But then again, on the other hand, they won't have many enough fans to worry about. Fuel the fire. And my thought was, if there would have been 50,000 fans in that ballpark instead of 25,000 that night, I think somebody would have got killed.
Well, and as it turns out, you know, they actually tried to take your crutch. One of my favorite stories from the book, Rally Round Cleveland, was you telling us about how you actually went to that game on crutches, and I'll let you tell the story, but somebody tried to take your crutch and use it as a weapon.
I had a broken left foot. At 19 years old playing basketball, like we all do crazy things, and it's the ninth inning. The Indians tie the game on the Lowenstein sack fly, scores Ed Crosby, ties the game, and here they come from everywhere. And I got these guys behind me come by, they try to grab that crutch. So I'm fighting them to keep my crutch. I'm thinking, this is nuts. And then it all exploded everywhere. But it was a night that, you know, I'll never forget that night. And 74 was more about Beer Night, but that's what you think of when you think of 1974 in Cleveland. You think of Beer Night.
Well, Jim, and you kind of alluded to the story there a week prior to that in Texas, kind of setting the scene. Going into the stadium, though, that night, and I'm sure you maybe felt some tension, but did you ever expect it to get out of hand like it did?
Not really. You could smell the marijuana. That was my first experience there. A warm, hot night. But what warned me was the firecrackers were coming out of the upper deck in the early innings. You know, the crowd was late getting there. It was a hot night, and the freeways were jammed coming in. It was a flash crowd, more or less, even though the team was doing well. But I never thought it would go that far. You had Tom Grieve hit a homer for the Rangers in the second inning, and a big heavyset woman comes out on top of the dugout, takes her top off and tries to kiss Nestor Shadyk, the home plate umpire. I'm thinking, well, this is not my idea of Major League Baseball. Then it would just escalate, and they finally came out of the stands in the seventh inning. They were throwing tennis balls onto the field. Billy Martin's throwing kisses to the crowd. Billy was a showman, as you guys know, and he fueled that thing from the start.
I want to stay on that for just a second, too, because I think it's so interesting when you look back at this, talking about how Billy Martin was certainly fueling the fire. Many people think that the legendary Pete Franklin had a lot to do with what happened also because of the way he kind of went about this in promoting just how big this game could be for the Indians, in that all those comments you mentioned that were made by Billy Martin, and that certainly incited a lot of people to make them want to come out to this game because of some of the comments he made. How much do you think Pete Franklin and his comments had to do with what went down?
I think Pete was huge. You know, it's just like anybody else. We can talk about our town being bad, having a bad team, but let somebody else talk about it. Hey, you can't talk about our people like that. And Pete called it payback time. Pete was on it Thursday night. He was on it Friday night. He was on it Monday night. Some of the writers blamed Pete. Hal Leibowitz was unhappy with Pete. Pete fueled the fire, and for two reasons. The club was good at that point. Get a big crowd to the stadium, but he was ticked at Billy Martin as well. You can't talk about Cleveland like that. And Pete was a big part of that. You know, Pete controlled a lot of things in those days. Everybody tuned into Pete Franklin, whether it was basketball season, football season, hockey season. After the game, you turned on Pete Franklin.
Yeah, he was what you heard as you were driving home from the games in most cases, too, with the Indians and with the Cavs for sure. And again, we're talking with Jim Clark. He's the author of the book Rally Around Cleveland, the story of the 1974 Indians. 10-cent beer night, a big part of that 1974 season. You know, Jim, knowing you the way I do, I know you're a big baseball fan, kind of an old school fan as well. And I know when you go to baseball games as a fan, you're hoping for a different experience than maybe the one you got that night. Now, I ask you this question because I'm just kind of curious. Was this the kind of thing, when you're watching the game, that maybe you're starting to get a little bit annoyed with what happened? Or did you find yourself becoming a little bit more curious from the entertainment aspect, seeing that things were just kind of spiraling out of control? How did you view this as you saw that this thing was getting further and further out of hand?
You hit it. I was annoyed. You know, I'm 19 years old. My team had been bad almost my entire life, except for maybe 2 years, 65 and 68. So we're finally good. We get the Gaylord's winning every time he goes out to pitch. Jim Perry's having a comeback year. And my thought was when the game was over and we forfeited the game, you watch, we'll lose the division by one game because of this. I mean, that was my first thought. Naive 19-year-old thinking, this will cost us the pennant. I was annoyed. I'm, you know, just pure baseball. I don't want the rigmarole. I'll sit down, give me my scorecard. I'll have three or four hot dogs or stadium mustard. Let me watch the game.
Nice.
Let me watch the game.
That's how it's done right there. Jim, I'd be lying if I said I never saw an in-stadium brawl kind of carry into the streets afterwards. Did it spill outside of the stadium afterwards, or did everyone kind of just calm down once the game was canceled?
Well, I think they were really tuckered out by the time they could get out of the ballpark, because it lasted a good while on the field. And there was no concerns walking back to our vehicles. We parked in the old 50-cent lot, which is now the Muni lot. You could park for 50 cents, walk under the bridge and be in the park. And there were no worries then. You know, we went back the next night. It was like a recital. It was quiet, people just clapping their hands. We talked to Steve Hargan, a former Indian pitcher in the bullpen. He goes, I just sat back. He goes, I got scared for a while. He goes, but, you know, he goes, once our players ran out there, we had to help them. But he was a former Indian. He goes, I was just stunned that, he goes, I never thought I'd see this at a baseball game. And I thought, you know, I never thought I would either. I've seen fights. You go, as a kid, it was neat to see a fight with the players. They didn't last long. Everybody ran out. It would end. This just wouldn't end. Would not end. Very dangerous.
Jim, in putting the book together, I know you were able to speak to and get the perspective of a number of different players and managers and coaches all alike. And just kind of curious as to, you know, what were some of the more unique takeaways that you heard from some of those guys who were on the field when all of this went down?
I talked with Grover, Mike Hargrove. He was a Ranger first baseman, rookie of the year. He said he was never really scared until late in the ball game. They threw an empty bottle of Thunderbird wine behind him. And that kind of shook him up a little bit. And you're watching the people come out and dance around, and it's kind of okay. You hear some firecrackers. But when that happened, that shook him up. And then talking to Joe Tate, when Joe relayed to me things that I really that I never knew, that the Indian brass pretty much left in the sixth inning. They were out of there. They were sensing this was not going to go well, and they took off. And then Joe telling me that the Cleveland police were listening to Joe and Herb. And if not for that, the extra help, we may not have come to the stadium that night. Then it really could have been worse. And those are things that I did not know.
See, that's interesting to me, too, because that was one of my bigger takeaways, too, Jim, is that, you know, there were off-duty police officers that were listening to Joe and Herb, and it wasn't until they heard that radio call they thought, uh-oh, we better get down there and offer some assistance before this really spirals out of control.
Well, Joe called it a riot, and they jumped all over him for that. And thank God Nick Mulledy goes, well, it was a riot. Because it was a riot. They were trying to get Joe fired, trying to direct the blame somewhere else, which is entirely wrong. And Mulledy goes, hey, it was a riot. Get off of Joe Tate. He's the best in baseball. Leave him alone.
Hey, we could all definitely agree with that. Well, Jim, we can close out on this. I know you would love to be calling some Rubber Ducks games right now. I'd love to be calling some Crusher games right now. But, boy, this pandemic has just taken on a life of its own. We don't really know when things are going to get back to some kind of normal. We're hoping that Major League Baseball can start playing at some point. I just wish we had a much better idea as to what was going to happen. I'd love to get your perspective on this. We've been talking about this on the show for the past week now. I contend that, look, these two groups, the players and the owners, they're extraordinarily stubborn, no question about that. But, boy, I'd like to think they're not stupid enough to come to some sort of agreement, right, over the next week or so?
Well, I guess it proves one thing. I always thought if you had a lot of money, you had to be smart to make it. But they're proving that wrong right now. How much is enough on each side? I mean, it's destroying the minor leagues completely right now, which is awful. Players getting released right and left. If we're going to cut down franchises anyway, I would think they would get together quickly. Because I think they have to get together quickly now because it's already the first week of June. If you want to begin a season in July, I think you need a good 4 weeks to get ready, not 2.5. They need 4 weeks of spring training so nobody gets hurt when they get back. Because you're not going to have a pool of 50 players to call on if there's no minor leagues to replace guys. And you got to come back, and I think you got to play 80 games at least, 50 games. I can't see that being worth the bother. You know, it's just not. They're worried about the second wave possibly coming in November. But, you know, then get your act together, play some doubleheaders, and play 80 games and get – America needs baseball. And I don't know if you remember this, but in the 68 riots in Detroit, that Tiger team helped heal a city by winning the pennant. Willie Horton went into the riots after a doubleheader in uniform to calm the streets down in Detroit. Baseball is just a small part of the problem right now with our country, but they sure could help give some healing to it. They would just use their heads.
Well, let's hope they're able to do that sometime soon because, you know, we all certainly need baseball back in our lives for sure. Jim, as always, we certainly appreciate the time. Always love having you on the show, and we encourage our listeners out there, if you haven't gotten a copy yet of Rally Around Cleveland, we highly encourage you do so. There's all kinds of great stuff in there on the 1974 Tribe. Jim, thank you again.
And thanks so much. Hopefully you can treat my son Austin well this year, Andy.
Absolutely. Hey, you know what? The Crushers need some left-handed pitching, so hopefully there will be some semblance of a Crusher season as well. Jim, thank you.
I hope so. Thank you, guys. Take care now.
You too, Jim. Again, that's Jim Clark, author of Rally Round Cleveland, story of the 1974 Cleveland Indians. Jim also, for many years, has been the voice of the Akron Rubber Ducks, formerly the Akron Arrows. And, boy, that's a great book. You know, aside from 10 Cent Beer Night, which is one of the